Don't let diaper rash come between you and your baby. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through. Keeping their delicate skin healthy and happy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick and goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable. When my oldest was little, she would get the worst diaper rash. It left me feeling so desperate to help her while also wanting something gentle on her skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor. When she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, she let nothing get in her way. You can use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel confident that you are making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra-premium formula for moms that won't settle when it comes to their little ones. Soothe and restore with active ingredients being dimethicone and petrolatum. You can find more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com or find it on Amazon or walmart.com.
Hello, everybody. You guys, today I have a very special episode to my heart because this is one of our own doula clients here in Utah sharing her VBAC story, and an even other like special thing is my partner, Kristen, who ended up attending her birth, is co-hosting. Hello, Kristen and Janelle.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you guys today?
So good. So good.
Before we started recording, we started talking about like time and how fast things are going. And you guys, I mean, I think you probably know if you are pregnant or have a newborn in your arms, like how fast time goes. But really, holy cow, we were with Janelle, we just talked about 8 months ago.
Yeah.
From the time that we're recording, which is wild to think about.
So
we're excited. It's so weird.
It's crazy.
It seriously feels like it was like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's like not fair.
No. How have things been? How have you been going with postpartum?
Things have been really good. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the things that pushed me to want a VBAC so bad was I was hoping for a better postpartum experience. Mm-hmm. I had pretty severe postpartum depression with my first baby, and I felt like having the VBAC would be some sort of like heavenly gateway into not having postpartum depression.
Yeah.
And well, in the beginning, that's true, but I still ended up having some of it. So, you know,
yeah,
things are good now though.
Good. I actually love that you kind of touched on that, because I think sometimes, especially after a traumatic cesarean or a traumatic experience that did lead to postpartum depression or anxiety or anything like that, that can be a big motivator for a different experience. But it also, I love that you kind of talked about like, well, it was a better experience, but I still had this a little bit and I've had to work through that and I'm good now. But even sometimes when we have a different experience, we have similar things. And so it's important to recognize that. And I love that you just pointed that out.
For sure. Yeah.
Do you have any tips on, before we get going into the episode, do you have any tips on, I don't know, tackling that the second time around too? Like, how were your feelings about things when you were starting to feel it and see it creep in?
Well, both experiences, it did creep in, just like you said. But with my daughter, it was very like, it felt really dark, really fast. She was my first baby. And then with my son, the VBAC, it was kind of a little bit like sneaky, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I guess just having someone on your support team, for me, it was my husband. And I just said, like, look, if you see any of these signs, please like say something to me. And we kind of just, it wasn't like we had a code word or anything. Like we were just, he was just really open in his dialogue with me and just said like, hey, I think something's up with you. Like you're not your normal self. And mm-hmm. as soon as he said that, I was like, yeah, you're right. Like it was really hard to admit because you want to be this like strong mom and you want to like be there for everyone and be everything that everyone needs. But sometimes it's just not how life works. And it's just, it's literally mm-hmm. a chemical imbalance in your body and your brain. So it has nothing to do with your circumstances. Just having someone on your team and on your side to say like, hey, I love you, let's get help, was absolutely integral to helping me to get like on the other side.
Yeah.
I think it's really great too, because you had been through it before. Mm-hmm. And so you were aware of the warning signs. And I think that that's a lot of times something we don't realize, because like I had struggled with postpartum depression too, mm-hmm. but it didn't happen until my third baby. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have any inclination that that was even something I was going to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so like, I think it's important, like we do all this work to prepare for our birth and to prepare for our VBACs and to prepare for the arrival of a new baby. But I think sometimes we don't educate ourselves on what those warning signs of postpartum depression are, because they can be very sneaky. And it's not always like deep, dark thoughts. Sometimes it's postpartum rage or postpartum anxiety, where you just are either extremely emotional or extremely angry all the time. Mm-hmm. And to have your husband looking out for you or someone on your support team that's kind of keeping an eye out for those things and noticing a shift in the way that you're behaving, I think is super important. So I think that's great that you guys have had that conversation ahead of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of those signs and symptoms. And like Kristen was saying, kind of how they can differ between like rage, anxiety, depression, the baby blues a little bit more at the end. For sure, because I think Kristen just nailed it. Like we focus so heavily, and I think even more sometimes, I don't want to say this as a fact, but like sometimes I feel like more as a VBAC mom, we're so hyper-focused on the end result of vaginal birth that sometimes I feel like we do forget a lot. And that's like everybody. I think they're so focused on getting baby here, but like, VBAC sometimes has to fight harder, search harder, read more, emotionally work through things a little bit more. And so we can forget. And then that creeps in, or like Janelle like said at the first, like it just kind of like, boom, darkness came over. We want to know how to handle that. So we'll talk more about that in the end.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community and start feeling the love and support today.
Okay, you guys, so I wasn't there, but in our practice, we have something that it's like a live timeline that we have. So whoever's at the birth can kind of take notes of the timeline, and we like to share that with our parents. And so we were all just sitting there watching it, like checking in. And I just remember feeling like this utter excitement inside of me for them as I was looking at the notes and following along with Kristen's updates. So I'm excited to now be here with you both and hear it in a different way. I have to turn the time over to you.
I'm so excited. I was actually telling Megan before we started that I was like actually fangirling out. I don't know exactly how I got started listening to the VBAC Link, but I knew as soon as after I had my daughter, like somehow I got onto it, and I binged so hard on this podcast, and it's just really like surreal to be, you know, recording with you. So thank you for allowing me to be here.
You've come full circle.
I have.
Full circle. So, I love that that happens with the VBAC link. Like, mm-hmm. I love that it's so often that it's like, I listened every day you were in my ear, and now here I am being in someone else's ear.
Yep. So just to all the mamas out there that are preparing, you got this. You can do this. So mm-hmm. With all VBACs, of course, there's a cesarean that starts the story, right? So we tried to get pregnant with my daughter for like 14 months. And we finally got pregnant, and the pregnancy was super easy. I was going for like a hypnobirth, unmedicated birth, and I didn't have a doula. I didn't really have, I don't know. You just don't know what you don't know. And like, as a first time mom, you kind of think you know, but you don't. Let me just tell you.
Or we have apps that tell us. So then yes. You really think we know because the app said so.
Yes. But then like, you just don't know until you're in it. So I gained like 60-ish pounds, which was kind of a lot, but I never had like hypertension or like a lot of issues with that. Never ended up with gestational diabetes, which I was really grateful for and worried about, but hindsight, like it really wouldn't have been a big deal, you know? So at my 36-week appointment, we found out my daughter was breech and homegirl was freaking stuck. Let me just tell you, she has been stubborn ever since. So we tried everything. We decided to do an ECV, and we did that at 37 weeks. And we just did that, like, I think like a low dose fentanyl was the only medication. And I was just trying to use my hypnobirthing to breathe through it. And the doctors told me that I was doing really well, but she was just stuck, and that one failed. And then we tried like going to the chiropractor. We tried like spinning babies. We tried basically everything that I could think of. We did not do acupuncture. That's the only thing that we didn't do. And I'd never hired a doula. So, you know, I could have done those things, but I didn't. We tried a second ECV at my 38-week appointment. And we did that one with a spinal block in the OR because they were like, well, sometimes on the second attempt, it can throw you into labor. And so mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, if that happens, then we'll just, you know, if we have any problems, then they can just do a cesarean right there. And she was very, very stuck in my pelvis, and the maternal fetal medicine doctor actually tried to push her up vaginally, and that was unsuccessful and very mm-hmm. uncomfortable. Even though I was numb, it still was like, this is weird. I don't know. I don't like this. And she just was stuck. So she was frank breech. And so I was like, okay, we're just going to go through with the cesarean. And I had like 2 more weeks. And so like 2 days later, I went out to dinner with a friend, and then that night when I was sleeping, I got up to pee, you know, like you do a million times when you're pregnant at the end. Mm-hmm. And like some water was leaking out, and I had like, was as I was walking back from the bathroom, and I was like, what in the crap? I just peed. Like, how is this happening? And my water had broken and there was meconium. And so I knew that it was going to be a little bit of an issue with meconium, just because my doctor told me that something like they were just worried about meconium with a breech baby. I don't know. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. true or evidence-based or not. But so we drove to the hospital, and we got there like at 5, and they had to do a COVID test, and they cleaned me out. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Like they
like
took
some rectally?
No, like vaginally. What? Like they took like some sort of that. Yeah, I don't know if it was because of the meconium, but they like took some like iodine something and like did like, it felt like a membrane sweep. Like if I never have had one of those, but if I could imagine what that was like, that's what it felt like. And I was
Kristen,
like,
have you ever seen that?
So it's funny that you say that, because I had never seen it before until Janelle told me that she'd had it. And I was like, that just sounds so odd. But I actually saw it at a birth the other day.
What is it for? Like, I actually don't know.
I had never seen it previously, and I thought it was just like an anomaly with your birth, Janelle, but mm-hmm. I saw it the other day again.
Do they have like a name for it?
No.
I'm Googling it right now.
Yeah. They didn't name it. They just used like iodine swabs and just cleaned her out.
Was that also a meconium?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
But you know what? Now that I think back on it, there was mech, but I don't think we knew there was mech until baby was born.
Oh.
So
interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was like the most unpleasant experience ever, on top of like mid-contraction, I was having the COVID swab up my nose. So that was really great because this was, you know, early 2021. So, yeah. So anyway, we waited for the OR and like the nurse came in and I asked her, I was like, can you check me? Like, I know I'm going back for surgery, but I'm just curious, like I'm having contractions. Can you just see if I'm dilating? And she's like, yeah, you're at a 4. And so I was like, oh, that's kind of nice. Like my body's actually doing the work here. So I was really excited about that. But jumping to the surgery, I was so terrified. I don't know what it was. It was just like, you're just going through so many emotions. Like you have to put so much trust in the nurses and the doctors and the anesthesiologists. You have to put so much trust that like these people paid attention in med school, that they know what they're doing, that they care about you, they care about your baby. And chances are they totally do. And they did pay attention and they got good grades. But I just felt nervous, you know, as first time mom. And it was, you know, they doing the jostling me around, and the anesthesiologist was really nice. And he was like, just talking to me, telling me everything that was happening. And when she was born, like I knew it because I felt them kind of yank her out. And they like had a clear drape, but I couldn't see over it. And so I was really sad that I didn't get to see her. And then because of the meconium, they had to take her and like they cleaned her up and stuff. So it was like 16 minutes or something before I got to see her, which like hindsight is not that long, but it felt like forever. And then I got to see her sweet little face and just, oh gosh, it was just the most precious thing ever. I still have, my husband snuck a video of it. You're not supposed to in the OR, but he snuck a video of it. And it's just, it's such a treasure for me to look back at the moment I got to meet her, because I didn't get to be the first one to hold her. And yeah, so.
I love that he did that though. So you have like record of that memory.
Yeah. And I never even asked him to. He just knew that I would want that. So he's really the best. So anyway, one thing that I didn't know about postpartum, regardless of if you have a C-section or a vaginal birth, your nurses will push on your abdomen and it hurts like a mother trucker. Let me just tell you. It hurts so bad. It's what?
It's called credaying. They creday and they're checking like where the uterus is, if it's clamping down and making sure it's not getting boggy and filling up.
Yep. And if you're like bleeding too much or not enough, yeah, it sucked. But then, like I said, I had really bad postpartum depression, and this one was not sneaky. This one was like almost immediately, like I felt like I bonded really well with my daughter, but there was just some darkness that was in my heart and I couldn't figure out what it was. And it took a while. I was actually maybe like 6 or 8 weeks at my postpartum appointment, and my doctor did like the screening, and she's like, yeah, your score was really not good. Like, let's get you some medication. And I was like, okay. I was very reluctant, but I saw almost an immediate difference, and I had it for a while, but it did help. So anyway, so that was my daughter's birth. And ever since then, I was, like I said, obsessed with the VBAC link. I knew right away that I wanted a vaginal birth. And actually, come to think of it, in the OR, like right before we went back for surgery, I was talking to the doctors and I was like, I really want to have another baby after this. Like, is there any way you guys can make sure that like my scar looks really good and that like I can have more babies vaginally? Like, that's really important to me. And they're like, yeah, we'll make sure that you're taken care of. And I was like very grateful for that. So what I wanted out of this birth, I think, I don't know if what I told Kristen is still what I have on my birth plan that I wrote down, but what I really wanted was a healthy mom. So me, healthy mindset, healthy baby, obviously, like those are like the minimum, right? And then I wanted baby out of vagina. I wanted skin to skin. I wanted to be the first one to hold baby. And I wanted to be fully present and fully included in all of the decisions. And I don't know if it was just that I was, I don't know exactly why that was so important to me in the moment, but it just felt like I didn't want any of this like robbed from me. I didn't want any of the experience to just be like done to me. You know what I'm saying? And I wanted as few interventions as possible. So those were like what I really wanted out of this birth. Is that what you have, Kristen?
Yeah, pretty darn close to that. I also have skin to skin, super important for you.
Yes.
And And I think it's worth noting you wanted to like catch and deliver your own baby, which you said, like, I wanted to be the first one to hold her. Mm-hmm. Hold the baby boy. But you had also told me that was like super important to you, is that you wanted to actually like deliver your child.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So with my son, my daughter was like maybe like 20 months old or something. It was the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And I felt like some pain in my side. We've been trying for like 6 months. And then like something was just wrong. Like I felt like I didn't have a big appetite. And it was like a Thanksgiving dinner at my mom's house. And like, I just didn't feel good. And something just like intuitively was just wrong. And I knew it. And my husband's like, well, why don't you just like try taking an antacid? And I'm like, no, it's not. It's like, this is, I know something's wrong. And so we went to the ER and I had appendicitis and I was pregnant. And so that was really fun to find out all at the same time. So because I was like 3 weeks, 4 days pregnant, like I had not even missed my period, like hadn't taken a test. They said that nothing in the surgery would change because baby was still so small. And I was like, okay, well, that's good. I was really nervous for the surgery and that there was going to be complications afterwards, but everything went fine. And as soon as I started to heal from surgery, I got so nauseous and I was so sick the whole pregnancy until like maybe like 25 weeks is when it finally started like to wean off. And like I said, I lived in VBAC mode. Like I binged the podcast on the daily. Like I went on walks. I would listen to it like while I was cleaning, driving, nap time, like all the things. And I also was very into evidence-based birth podcast. Mm-hmm. I was very curious about like just like water birth and home birth and all of the statistics. And my husband actually pulled me aside while I was in crazy VBAC mode, as we call it. And he was like, Janelle, I'm just worried that if you end up having a C-section, like where are you going to be at mentally? Are you going to be able to be okay with this if that ends up being your path? And I was like, you know what? Like, I really do need to prepare for that too, because things really can go in any direction with birth. And I think as soon as he said that to me and I started to like prepare that way, I just kind of became like, okay, whatever happens, happens. This is okay. Like, and I did have like the same like VBAC crazed mindset, but I was also just very okay with things happening. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah. Well, it totally makes sense. And I think a lot of the times as we are preparing for that, it is important to note that like things can go and still prepare for the other, but like prepare, but then do all those things while you're preparing. So if it doesn't happen, then you don't have to look back and be like, but what if this or what if that? And
yes,
you know, and then it's like you're confident in the way you prepared. And so, but then you know, well, it could go this way. It's not what I'm going to plan for, but it could go that way. And I'll be more content because I'm doing everything within my control.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So like at 20 weeks, my insurance changed and I had to find a new provider and I was a whirlwind. So I actually found my midwife through the VBAC link list of providers. And her name is Kira Waters, and she is the best. I love her so much. And the first thing that I said to her when I interviewed her, is I was like, how do you feel about VBACs? And she said, I love VBACs. I was like, oh my gosh, okay, say no more. So yeah, after we met Kira, then we were on the search for a doula, and I came across you guys, and then I met with Kristen and like the stars were just aligning, like this is going to work out. This is going to be perfect. And she just felt like, I don't know how to explain it. Like it wasn't like an instant connection, but it was just like this deep trust that I instantly had in her, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
it was almost like I've known her for a long time, but not in the sense like I've known like a high school friend, if that makes sense. I don't know.
It totally makes sense. There's,
like she's my long lost aunt, I guess. Like full of wisdom.
I love it. I'll take it.
Well, and there is something about a doula. Like, don't you think? I mean, so Chris, fun fact, Kristen and I actually had the same doula. But there was something about our doula, her name's Robin, she's amazing, that like I didn't even know her that. I mean, I knew her through like the birth community and stuff, but like I didn't know like every detail about her, but there was this weird sense of confidence that I was like, it's going to be fine. And then her partner at the time, or her partner, Angie, was also somebody that I was like, she's like, I know she has to be in my corner. Like, mm-hmm. I just knew that those two people had to be on my team. And yeah, it wasn't like I like instantly like knew them and felt the connection of like been childbirth friends, but I was like so deeply connected right away and still am to this day to them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's interesting, like there's, I'm kind of a private person, and I didn't want my mother-in-law or my mom in the birth room. But like, as soon as I met Kristen, I was like, yep, come to the birth. So yeah, let's see. I think it was my 34 or 36 week appointment, somewhere around there. I met with the OB, because if you have a midwife, they want you to meet with the OB. And he did the VBAC calculator. And I think it said 47%, or it was like 47 or 57% chance, like pretty moderate of chance of success. Mm-hmm. And like, he was really nice, but I just was like, eh, I don't really want him to deliver my baby. Mm-hmm. And let's see, I had gained like the similar amount of weight, but again, no hypertension. Like, everything was pretty much the same to this point, other than baby was head down this time. And so I was 37 weeks, and I went out to dinner with a friend. Fun fact, same restaurant, same order. That night, I went into labor.
So, you're onto something.
Yep.
Yeah. You're onto something.
It was Zupas. So if
you... I was going to say, what was it? Zupas?
It was Zupas. Yeah, I don't remember what.
You have to know your order, too.
Yeah, what did you order?
I think it was... I want to say it was the pulled pork sandwich.
So
maybe like, I don't know, one of the soups, the cheesy soup, the Wisconsin, I think. That one. Okay, that one, and then the pulled pork sandwich, and that's what I ordered. So both times. So if you want to go to labor, I don't know if that's even tried and true, but it was so interesting.
I'm pretty sure it's not evidence-based.
No. For me.
For you, it is.
You've got some good stats. Yeah. Yeah.
So I went into labor that night, and my husband, I didn't say this before, but when I went into labor with my daughter, he was like, no. Because it was like so early. And he's a gamer. And so he was like up that night playing games on the computer, and he was just really tired. And the same reaction was had from him this time too. He was like, no,
early in the morning.
Yeah. He's like, dang it. So I wanted to labor at home as long as I could. So let's see. We think we text you pretty close to that time. Was that like or five?
I got a text at 3:06 a.m. that you thought your watch broke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I labored in the tub at home for a while, and my husband made me the best peanut butter and jelly sandwich I have ever had in my entire life. And I ate a peach, and I just kind of hung out in the tub. And I had spent, like, when I would listen to the podcast before bed, I would listen in the tub and just kind of hang out and relax. So it was like a safe space for me that I was very used to. And I hung out there for a long time. It really wasn't that long, but like when you're in labor, it feels like a long mm-hmm. time. So I had my mom come over. So she was with our daughter, and once my contractions were like 4 to 5 minutes apart, we were like, okay, well, our hospital's like 30, 40 minutes away. We should probably just head in just to be safe. So I got admitted, I think it was around 6. Is that what you have, Kristen?
It was around 6, a little bit before 6.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I agreed to be checked at that time. And I didn't want a lot of checks because I didn't want to introduce bacteria having my water being broken, but I was curious where I was at. And they said I was at a 4, and I told the nurse beforehand, I was like, I don't want to know, just, but she let it slip. She's like, oh, you didn't want to know, huh? And I was like, no, but it's okay.
And isn't that where you were at the first one?
Yeah, kind of. Yep. 4 centimeters. And I was like, okay, well, at least I got this far before.
Yeah.
So she said it was 50% of face and then -2 station. And at this point, like, my husband and I were kind of clueless because we'd only had one meeting with Kristen. So we like hadn't gone over like counter pressures We hadn't gotten like how he's going to actively be supporting me in birth. And so we were both just like, okay, now what?
Yeah, I actually think we had had your second prenatal scheduled for like the day, yeah. the day you went into labor. It was later mm-hmm. that day. Like, yeah. Your baby decided to beat us to the punch.
He was so excited. He just wanted to be a part of it. Yep. So we were really clueless, and I started feeling the contractions like really intensely. And I was not as prepared as I thought I was for contractions. And I was like second guessing all of my life decisions because I, again, wanted to be unmedicated. And I even signed the consent form for the epidural at this point. I was like, okay, like just call it, like I'm done. And Kristen joined us like, I think an hour after I got there, around 7. Mm-hmm. And yeah. It just like the second that she stepped in the room, like the energy just shifted. Like, I don't know how to explain it. She just brought so much like excitement and like, I got this. Like, I got you. It's all right. It's going to be okay. And like, she didn't like, I know she wasn't intending to be like my savior, but she kind of was like in that moment, just for energy's sake. Like, I don't think I could have done it if she hadn't walked in with the confidence and like the joy that she had, just the excitement for birth and like just the passion to be there. And it just made such a huge difference in our experience. And I love you so much, Kristen. Thank you. So,
she's all sorry. Emotional.
Yep, we're all just crying here. It's fine.
It really is the best job in the world. Like, it's the best job. Mm-hmm.
It's such a sacred space. Like, and like I said, I didn't have my mom or my mother-in-law there. Like, I just wanted it to be very intimate. And Kristen was so good at honoring how intimate it was. So let's see. Let me jump back to the story. So around 10, I think I got a new nurse. And this nurse was awesome. Her name is Alicia. And she was at St. Mark's. If you ever get Alicia at St. Mark's, she is a godsend. She was great. There was multiple times where like Kristen and Alicia and my midwife, Kira, and my husband were all like taking turns, like doing counter pressures on me. And they just all like synced up and were so harmonious. And okay, so like 10 o'clock, I was still 4 centimeters, 100% effaced. And I labored in the tub at this point for a while. And it really wasn't that long, but like in the moment, it felt like a long time. And I loved and I hated the tub because like I didn't have anything to like brace myself. Like Michael, my husband, couldn't give me counter pressure in the tub. But the relief afterwards in the water was so amazing. So I really loved that. And then we kind of just, Kristen's like, I'm going to leave you two alone and have a little moment. And I think you had even brought these like little tea lights, like the electric tea lights. And you had set those up in the bathroom and the lights were dimmed. And it was just such a special, like sacred moment with Michael and I. And he just was like, you know, I really get why you hired her. Like, I love her. Like, she's amazing. And I was like, yep, this is why. He's like, yeah, we don't ever want to do birth without her. So
have more babies. I'll be there.
Yes. Undecided, but yes, we do. Absolutely.
Fair enough.
So that was at 10. I was at a 4. And then I got in the bath. And like 11:15, I was out of the bath by then. And I had a cervical check and I was at a 7. So I jumped a lot in that time. Mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of work and I was at 100% effaced and I was 0 station and I was moving all over positions. We did like the throne position. There was one where I was like kind of hands and knees on the birth bed, but like I didn't have the birth ball, I guess. So like 11:40-ish, I was feeling really pushy and I got so emotional. Like, Kristen will remember this. I sobbed. It was ugly cry for like probably a good half hour. And this is now what we know as transition, right? Mm-hmm. But it was rough. I was having like Charlie horses and like, oh, it was just rough. I don't know. I just was crying a lot and I don't know exactly what was happening, but I just was preparing, I guess, releasing emotion for the baby to come out. So around 12:30, I was kind of pushing here and there. And around like 12:45-ish, I started really pushing. And again, like at this point, I was in the lithotomy position, which is like sitting upright, kind of how you picture in like movies and stuff, how people have babies. And I was like screaming this baby out. Like I was the loudest person on that floor of the hospital for sure.
And I think there's something to it. I think sometimes roaring your baby out is what people need.
Yeah. Absolutely. I was absolutely a screamer.
You know what? It's funny because I don't remember you being loud.
But oh my gosh, I mean, really? Great.
Yeah, I don't remember it.
Oh, praise be. That's great. Because I remember
I was going to say, like, there's a good chance you weren't as loud as you thought you were. That happens a lot of times. You think you're very loud and you probably weren't. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of women like roar their babies out and it's like very powerful and very primal and very like natural to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I remember at one point there was like a nurse that came in and I could tell she was like one of the baby nurse because she had like the baby like cart and stuff. And I was at like mid push and I remember saying like, get the out. And I'm pretty sure that everyone in the room thought I was talking about the baby, but I was talking about the nurse. I was like, get out. I was like, I don't want anyone in here seeing this. This is ugly.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
Anyway, so I finally pushed the baby out at, let's see, 1:30. So I was pushing for like an hour. And just like the moment that I got to push him out, I was like very emotional. And my midwife kind of handed him to me, like helped me finish. Like she delivered the first part of him. And I had a little bit of a cervical lip. And so she's like, you got to really push him out. Or maybe it was the shoulder that was stuck? I feel like I'm picturing the best part right now.
No, I mean, you didn't have like an official like shoulder dystocia. He just needed a little extra like strength to get the rest of his body out.
Okay. Yeah. So that's where we were at. And she's like, you really need to push here. And I just remember like you said, like roaring him out. And she helped me pull him to my chest and just having that warm, gooey, slimy baby was just everything that I could have hoped. Like, I would not change that for the world. That oxytocin hit that you get from smelling that baby that comes out of you is just unreal. And I was so happy that I got to be the first one to like hold him and to see him. And I just am really, really grateful that I had the support that I did, because I don't feel like I could have done it without my husband, without Kira, our midwife, without that nurse, Alicia. Okay, I am like I said, I'm butchering this best part because I forgot to say so many things that I wrote down. Okay, let me back up a little bit. So right around the time that I was crowning, I just felt like my skin was crawling and like oxygen like was not enough for me. Like I couldn't get comfortable. I couldn't get on top of my breathing. And like I was asking for an epidural and like I had already signed the consent form, but my nurse Alicia was like, oh, the anesthesiologist is busy. And by the time he comes, like it's going to be too late. So sorry, sneaky little nurse. Cause she knew what I wanted. So I actually asked for like a local anesthetic. I was asking for like lidocaine or something. Like I was like, what do you use to stitch people up? Like use that on my, use that on me because I'm struggling here. And my contractions were like, Kira told me that they were like three little ones and then one really, really big one. And then I would have like a 5-minute break. And that's how my contractions were up until the end. And it was just like, like I said, I couldn't get on top of my breath. And like, I remember looking at Kristen and like my husband, and I just like couldn't figure it out. Like, why can't, like, I there's just like this moment inside of me that like, even though I had them there, like I had to dig so deep in my own body and my own soul. And I even said a prayer to God and I was like, I have got to have some help here. Like, I cannot push this baby out alone. Can you please send like some angels or something to be with me, because I can't do it. And I got a little bit of a break, like a little bit of a longer break between contractions. And I finally had Kristen and Michael help me to get on top of my breathing. And that's when I was able to push the baby out. So Anyway, yeah.
It's crazy how like breath really is so impactful, but then we're always told to hold it. So we got to like find the breath, find the hold, find the strength and re-grasp. And sometimes that means taking a step back and rebreathing and finding that and regrounding.
It's so hard like in the moment. Cause you think you, like I said, like you think you know, but you think you know, but you don't know until you're there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I do have to say that like the second that I pulled him out and I was just, he was just warm and gooey and on my chest and they were kind of trying to rouse him a little bit because he was a little bit slower to take his breath, his first couple breaths. I just was screaming, I did it, I did it, I did it, I did it, like a million times. And my husband was just like, he said, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. And I actually wanted to say what he told his family. He said, today I saw what Janelle was made of and she freaking did it. I'm so proud of her. Mm. And just the way that he said that about me was like unprovoked, was just really sweet. And yeah, so there it is. There's my story. It's choppy, but
no, listen, I love that. I love that. And would you have anything to add, Kristen, to like your experience of that?
No, I would just say, like, Janelle went into this whole thing very prepared. Like, she had educated herself, and she was very prepared for whatever came at her. And she did her work ahead of time. Like, she found a fantastic provider, and she knew what she was doing. Like, she knew everything that she needed to know about a VBAC, but at the same time, she was very welcoming to let birth just unfold how it was going to unfold. Because there was a time, like, we talked about this a little bit earlier. You got to the hospital, you had been laboring really well at home and contractions were coming really, like really quickly and you were progressing well. And then you got to the hospital and everything just kind of stopped. And that's completely normal. Like we see that happen all the time in birth mm-hmm. where just that change in scenery and the commotion tends to slow things down a little bit, but you didn't like, that didn't get to you. You just needed to get back in your groove and, you know, you got settled back into the hospital and you and Michael had some time together. And, you know, I don't think we should ever discount like those special moments that you have with just your husband. Like when I step out to give you time in the bathroom, that's not me like necessarily trying to like, you know, take a break myself. It's to give you guys time to help that oxytocin get flowing, to get labor progressing again, and to protect that intimate space. And you guys were like a phenomenal team. It was incredible to watch the two of you together. Michael was so incredibly supportive. And like that moment where he like leaned down and just said to you, like, I'm so proud of you, Janelle. It was like, it was so touching just to watch his love and his like pride for you. It was incredible.
He really is the best. I'm so emotional just thinking about him because I just love him so much. And like obviously none of my family would be possible without him, but just like, I couldn't do like mom life without him. And just, I couldn't do like the birth without him. And I just, he really was everything. So get yourself somebody who loves you, who loves the ugly parts of you too.
Yeah, I say this a lot too. Like, I don't think, I mean, moms obviously are going through so much during labor, but I don't think dads are ever given as much credit as they deserve because they're watching someone that they love go through one of the hardest things that they've ever done. And while we can do things to help mitigate some of that, there's nothing they can do to fix it or take it away. And it's emotionally taxing on them.
I agree. I was just going to say the same thing, like thinking about, I mean, and as mothers, right? Like thinking about your child doing one of the hardest things in their entire life and how you feel. Now, you're not his child, but you're someone he loves probably more than anyone on this earth, you know, and especially at that time, like he was feeling those things too. And he watched you prepare. And he even was questioning and like, I see how much you want this. How will this affect you if it doesn't go this way? He was literally taking in consideration that far before the birth even happened, thinking about you that deep. It just is amazing. And I think that's one of my personal favorite things about being a doula. Like, of course, seeing babies be born, like it's just incredible. It's absolutely incredible. But seeing what Kristen just described, like these two people who love each other more than anything that just brought this human into this life, and seeing them bond and grow and take pride in one another during the support of their baby. It's one of the coolest parts about being a doula.
It makes me want to, like, when my kids are a little bit older, I think that's what I want to do, but you know, we'll see.
Right. Yes. Listen, I think that's how a lot of us start, right? Like, we get inspired by our own births, and then we find the time in our life when that journey feels right and we take off. And so I encourage you to become a doula. And yeah, it's such an amazing journey. So I want to definitely touch on the postpartum stuff that we mentioned that we wanted to talk about. But I also found a little article thing on the vaginal cleansing. But I just wanted to, yeah.
Okay.
And it's actually from Cochrane.org. This was published in April of 2020, so 4 years ago. We'll make sure to have the link here in the show notes. But I was just curious more of what it was. And in one of the articles, it said vaginal toileting. I'm like, what? Like, that's weird. Odd. Like, you know, like, I know in my head, I was like, toileting? That's like a really strange vocabulary. But in my head, I'm like, maybe they're thinking like getting rid of, I don't know. I'm not going to go there. But so it's called vaginal cleansing with antiseptic solution before cesarean delivery to reduce infections after surgery.
Oh.
So kind of interesting. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because I really want to get to postpartum, but what evidence did we find? It says we searched for new evidence in July of 2019. And in this update, we have included 21 randomized control studies involving a total of 7,038 women, which to me kind of sounds small, undergoing cesarean section. It goes down and it says cleansing the vagina with antiseptic solution immediately before cesarean delivery probably reduces the incidence of post-cesarean infection of the uterus. 20 trials of 6,918 women showed moderate certainty evidence. So they're moderately confident that the reduction was seen for both iodine-based solution and chlorhexidine, I think is how I say it, based solutions. Says the risk of post-operative fever and post-operative wound infection were probably reduced by vaginal cleansing, both moderately again. So, I mean, it goes on even more, talking about wound complication, an infection of the uterus may be lower in women receiving preoperative vaginal cleansing with solution. So that is interesting, because one of the things for me that kind of, it maybe I'm wrong, but I was under the impression that meconium was like sterile, like it's poop. But the reason why they like get so worried in the lungs is because it's like really thick and tarry, and think about our lungs and poop, tarry poop, right? Like, that's what my understanding was. It was more of that versus like it was toxic to them. But maybe, I don't know. Maybe I need to research my meconium evidence. Do you know, Kristen?
I don't. Does that study say that they do it specifically related to meconium, or just in prep for a C-section?
Just in prep for the C-section. So, because when you guys were talking about the relation to meconium, it just made me think, because I thought the meconium was okay. So it doesn't really talk about it here at all. It did say that they did not observe any difference between groups of women with ruptured membranes and women with intact membranes, which to me says, like, because intact membranes means no meconium, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't know.
It wouldn't be, yeah, they wouldn't know or wouldn't be present. So it's just, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
It must have just been a coincidence with C-section and meconium being present. And then, like I said, the one that I just saw, I think it was last, it might have been a week ago.
That ended in a cesarean?
It was poor a C-section. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they knew meconium was present at the time that they did the cleansing or the vaginal toileting, as I guess we're calling
vaginal
it.
Vaginal toileting. Yes, that sounds so gross.
Toileting. I know. So this article says vaginal cleansing specifically, But yeah, then there was another article that talked about the effects of vaginal douching. And then the other one was the effects of vaginal toileting before cesarean. So
I'm not a fan regardless.
Yeah. So interesting. I mean, I honestly have never seen that. So, I mean, it's 4 years ago. So maybe some places are catching up with possibly, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, moderate, it may not. It's not like concrete. But anyway, there was that. Had to just kind of throw that in because that was a big question.
Yes. And I think just touching on that, yeah. I think maybe it's okay to decline that. And I would have declined it had I known that that's what was going to happen to me.
Yes.
Because it very much happened to me on that.
Yeah. And it wasn't discussed. I mean, you still didn't even know the reason why right now, right? You were still like processing. So those types of things are the things that, as these things are happening, you can stop and say, hey, whoa, what's the evidence on this? You can ask about that. Yep. Or say like, hey, can you tell me the pros and cons here? Because I don't know if I want this.
Yep.
And then that's, again, it's ultimately up to you to choose if you want that. Now, if you're not expecting a cesarean and all of a sudden they're doing this, that might be a red flag to start asking questions because they may be mentally on the other side of the wall preparing you for a cesarean that you're not aware of.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that this is a good example though of just in general how much they don't let you know is actually quote unquote voluntary. Like a lot of times the way they phrase things is like, hey, I'm doing this to prepare for this, or I'm gonna do this without letting you know, like, hey, if you don't want this, we don't have to do this.
Right.
So I think that a lot of things, especially as a first time mom, like you don't know. You don't know what is like
protocol,
you know, what you have to get to and what's protocol. And even if it is protocol, you can still decline it. Like you don't know a lot of that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we'll be quick and we'll include it. This link in there. This is from the Mayo Clinic. Talks about different symptoms of postpartum depression. We talk about baby blues. So I'm just going to go through this real fast and I encourage everyone to go click it. But baby blues symptoms may include things like mood swings, anxiety, sadness, irritability, feeling overwhelmed, reducing of concentration, appetite problems, trouble sleeping, and even crying. Now, postpartum depression symptoms, they have listed as depressed mood or severe mood swings, crying too much, difficulty bonding with your baby, withdrawing from family and friends, overwhelming tiredness, hopelessness, feeling worthless, restlessness, super anxiety, stuff like that. Postpartum psychosis is getting confused and lost. A lot of the times people with psychosis will be like mid-thought and then they just stop and they literally have no idea what's going on and they're very confused. Having obsessive thoughts about your baby, hallucinating, that kind of sometimes goes into that, like feeling very confused, not sleeping, having too much energy, or like almost feeling like you're so exhausted, but you're like really, really, really high. Does that make sense? Like on energy, making attempts to harm yourself or your baby. And then there's more. So when to see a doctor, if it goes past 2 weeks after your baby's born, you're noticing it getting worse. Your partner's noticing it getting worse. It's making it hard for you to physically take care of your baby or yourself. Things like that. All really good symptoms to know, be aware of. And yes, like Janelle said, it is very hard to admit sometimes because we're in it, but get that supportive team. This is also a really great conversation to have prior to having a baby. Even if you've never had a baby before, you've never had any of these symptoms before, to talk about it and create a plan for if these symptoms are coming in, what to do, what you want to do while you're in a different space. All right. I just ran really quickly through that because I know our time is up, but definitely go check that out. And Women of Strength, know that it is okay to ask for help. It is okay.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. 100%.
Thank you guys so much for joining me today. It was such a pleasure. I loved seeing the emotion, the waterworks, the smiles, like the uncontrolled laughter. Like it just is so much fun and absolutely adore you both.
Oh, I love you. Thank you so much for having me. I love you, Kristen. Love you, Megan.
Love you, too.
Love you.
Thank you so much, Megan.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.